Somewhere men are laughing, and somewhere children shout, but there is no joy in Mudville. Mighty Casey has struck!
I only got one thing to say to you. Strike this mother out.
2-2. He got it! A perfect game. And one done by the King.
Hey, you! Are you right there, Apple?
Took away a game-tying home run for Manny Ramirez.
That's my thing, fellas.
We will see you tomorrow night.
Ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for visiting us this evening.
I feel like today, if you threw the rich people's tea in the harbor, they'd just be kind of like, all right, I don't really give a shit about that. It's your tea. You paid for it. I'm still making a bunch of dough off the people who didn't pour their tea into the harbor.
And then there would be an entire contingent of freaks who would go dig the tea out of the harbor and start selling harbor tea. As like a revenge for the tea importers. Like,
there would be an anti-woke countercultural movement of people who drink harbor tea, like those people who drink liberal tears mugs today.
Exactly.
They'd be drinking harbor tea out of the liberal tears mugs.
There's the Sons of Liberty and the Sons of the anti, I don't know. What's the joke there? What's the opposite of the Sons of Liberty?
The dads of anarchy?
The dads of freedom. What a time to be alive.
What a time to be alive. We are coming at you guys on Sunday, April 6th, wrapping up the third series of the Major League Baseball season. The Red Sox are pounding the St. Louis Cardinals right now, 15-2. When that one wraps up, we will be three series in, and I feel like we're starting to get into that groove where baseball is on every single day. People are excited about it, and at the same time, it's just back to being, you know, life. It just feels like you wake up, you watch games, you have them on all day, 1 p.m., 4 p.m., 7 p.m., 10 p.m. even, and you go to bed. It feels really nice to be back into that groove. We need some sort of consistency in our lives. And today we got a pretty fun episode. We're going to kind of analyze some trends that have been going on through these first 9 or 10 games for most teams. We're going to try to identify what's real and what's fake. For the second half of the episode, we're going to give 5 hot takes each, bold predictions for the 2025 season. And of course, this is the Mudville Podcast, and I am one of your hosts, Nolan Rabine.
I'm your other host, Brody Staub.
Brody, how are you feeling about the first 10 games thus far of this season? Have things shaken out sort of how you expected it to go at the very start of this year, or were you expecting something a little bit different? What are the vibes like?
No, things have not gone how I was expecting this year. The Yankees have one of the best offenses in baseball somehow, except that didn't really show up today. I will say, I feel very good about my prediction that Juan Soto will not be beloved by Mets fans instantaneously. Right now, I think he has, let me check his number, let's see, 6 walks, 4 strikeouts. He's hitting he's hitting 240. He's not wowing. He has one homer. Without the protection of Aaron Judge behind him, I feel very good about my guess there. The Braves being 1-8 is shocking. I was not bought in, but I didn't think they were going to be terrible. And we'll get into some more stuff about why. Angels playing fun baseball, like very shocking. Same goes for the Giants. I kind of am enjoying that. The A's are interesting. I'm very disappointed in the Mariners. I think the Diamondbacks are real, which makes the West terrifying. That's kind of it. I'm a little disappointed in the Twins too, but that is to be expected every season. I would not be the only person who's disappointed in the Minnesota Twins. I think that's kind of it. Those are my general thoughts. We'll get into players and statistics and stuff, but in general on how teams are performing so far, that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I think if you go through the standings page right now, more or less it would look about how you would expect the season to have started.
Except for the Marlins.
Yeah, but the Marlins being 5-4 is pretty shocking. The
yes.
Braves, of course, at 1-8 are the major outlier there, dead last in the NL East. I am pretty confident that is not going to last because I was totally all in on them for my prediction. I'd have
Marlins are buyers
wins.
At the deadline.
Number one hot take off the bat. The fact that the American League East is already super close. No one really started out like exceptionally well or bad. Yankees currently lead at 6-3. Sox are going to be 6-4 after this game that they're leading 16-2 at the time of recording. And the Orioles right now are in last at 4-6. To have the floor for that division being a fifth place team right around 500, that's about what we would have expected. The AL Central has been so disappointing thus far, but we're going to get into that for our real or fake here. Texas Rangers starting 8-2. We talked a lot about them on our preview. I think that team is a lot of fun, and if it all clicks for them, that could be one of the more scary teams in the American League. And thus far, they're showing that they can absolutely be that team. So you mentioned the Angels. The Astros right now are a couple games below 500. Mariners in last at 3-7. Sort of all of the fears about that offense are coming to fruition a bit, and their pitching has not been great. Brian Wu was not super on today, had a really bad fourth inning against San Francisco. Emerson Hancock got destroyed in his one start. NL East starts with Phillies, Mets. NL Central, Cubs, Brewers only at 500. They were off to a really, really bad start, but they have definitely picked it up over the last few games. Jackson Chourio.
Well, when you get swept like that, yeah, it's not going to help. So,
And then, you know, right now, I think the headline of Major League Baseball is the NL West. The Dodgers started 8-0. They're now 9-2. Padres started out 7-0. They're now 8-2. And the San Francisco Giants on a 7-game win streak, they are currently 8-1. So that's all pretty wild. Three teams right now with an 800 or better win percentage, all in that one division. It's been a fun start to the year, but the thing is, at this point in the year, early April, 10 games in, it becomes kind of tough to gauge as to, you know, what is actually real, you know, which players are true breakout candidates or which guys are just on a hot 10-game sample, which if it happened over like a random stretch in June or July, we wouldn't really care about it so much. So that's what I want to start off by doing today. I've compiled a list of some teams and some players who have been out to some really hot starts, a few who have been off to really not so hot starts. I want to try to gauge what's real and what's not. So why don't we just hop right into that, I say. We're going to start with the San Diego Padres, who, like we just said, started out 7-0, lost their last two games after that, but just won today to bring their record up to 8-2, looking like the second best team in the National League. Now, we obviously know that the Dodgers are the best team in this conference, so my question to you, Brody,
KNBA.
Well, whatever. The second best team in this league. So are the San Diego Padres actually the second best team in the National League?
I don't think that they will be by the end of the season. I think so far they've shown it. I think it's absolutely fair to say that, you know, through 10 games, they seem to be. But I expect that they will sell at the deadline, unfortunately for them, and kind of build more towards the future. I don't think it's going to be, you know, you're not going to get rid of any of their young stars. It won't be Fernando Tatis. Probably will not be Manny Machado. He has a really tough contract to move. I think he's signed through 2033 with a lot of money left on that. So not Manny Machado. I wouldn't be shocked if you see some of this pitching go, and I think it will be tough for them to compete this year after they kind of move more of their veteran pieces. So far, yes, I think it's fair to say that they have been the second best team in the National League. I mean, Jackson Merrill is like incredible. This guy who is not a top prospect that I can remember. I mean, his name wasn't really getting thrown around before the beginning of last season, other than this guy is probably going to show up with the Padres this year. And now out of nowhere, I mean, he's having an incredible start to this season, had an incredible run last year. Could have won Rookie of the Year if Paul Skeens was not Jesus himself. Very fun to watch him actually come into stardom at age 22. So he's exciting for sure. So there's stuff that they will be keeping. Oh, Luis Arraez probably will get traded, by the way. Maybe Jake Cronenworth too. There's definitely a lot to love about the Padres. They had a very big win today, as you mentioned. I wouldn't be shocked if this kind of is setting them up for a sell-off come the summer.
I could absolutely see that. I'm going to say that I do see this team as a legitimate playoff contender, and the main reason for that is that I'm absolutely buying into this being an MVP caliber season out of Fernando Tatis Jr. He is off to an incredible start. Dolan, 5 bases already, hitting .412, got a 186 WRC plus, and this could be a guy who he could join that 40-40 club this year. He could even steal more bases than that. I mean, he is a true 5-tool player. I love watching Tatis play, one of the true superstars in Major League Baseball, and he is absolutely on that path to fully reclaiming that reputation that he had before that disastrous 2022 season. And over the next decade, we could see 10 all-star appearances out of him over the next 10 years. And yeah, I absolutely love Jackson Merrill as well. Another guy who puts the bat on the ball, makes quality contact, 188 WRC plus for him. Two guys at the top of this lineup that I think are just incredible players who will be for a long time to come. The Padres, of course, they have a lot of like financial concerns that they're going to have to work out over the next decade, honestly, that they signed a lot of long-term contracts to guys who probably won't come too close to actually providing the value that those contracts would imply that they will. I mean, they gave a 6-year extension to a 38-year-old Yu Darvish, obviously signed Xander Bogaerts through his age 42 or 43 season. So going to be a lot for that organization to try to work out. But I do see this as really a contending roster right now.
Gavin Sheets is one dotting.
Yeah, move him. He's killing it. Dylan Cease is off to a great start. Nick Pivetta looks pretty good. I mean, still a bit erratic like he has been his whole career, but you kind of know what you're going to get out of Nick Pivetta. He's a guy who's got great stuff, but is not going to give you a great start 100% of the time. I think if the Padres are able to limit some of the damage when he isn't on his game and go out and win the games where he is, that could be a great fit for them. I really like this team, and I'm going to go with Real for them. So I don't know if they're actually the second best team in the National League, but I think that they can compete with the teams who would be. So I'm in on the Padres. I'm going to say that they are Real. Next up is the San Francisco Giants at 8-1. They are on a 7-game win streak, and notably for them, they, over the past like 5 years, have been so mid. They have just been right around 500, except for that 2021 season where they somehow won 107 games. So do we think that this could be sort of a repeat of that? Do we think that this team is destined to win a lot more games than we had originally projected, or are they going to fall back down to right around 500?
So this is something that I'm going to get into a little bit later, actually, in the second half of the show. So stay tuned there. I think the Giants are real. I think this team is pretty good. They're better constructed this year than they have been in years past. I really like their additions in the offseason. I mean, there weren't a ton, but I really think adding Willy Adames helps this lineup a lot to a very already established group of veterans and some young guys who can really hit. Elliot Ramos already is off to a great start again. I personally was not expecting him to repeat his performance from last year, but so far he's got 3 homers. He's almost at a 1 dot. He's 176 OPS plus. He's hitting the crap out of the ball. Jung-Hoo Lee looks great so far. 5 doubles, you know, out of the gate. They've got Matt Chapman's having a bit of a renaissance this year. Like, he's actually hitting for average, which is not something that Matt Chapman ever really does. A couple homers, showing his power, of course. And I think Mike Yastrzemski is kind of having like one of those seasons that Paul Goldschmidt is kind of having, where it's like when, you know, all of a sudden you have reason to believe and enjoy baseball again, you start playing well. So I think for like a long time, he just was not hitting at all. And now all of a sudden this team seems like they can actually do something, and they're playing great. And Luis Matos in a few appearances has looked good so far. I expect that we'll be seeing a lot more of him over the course of the year, and that will come up again later. But this rotation also has been great so far. Like, they have Jordan Hicks, who is a convert, you know, obviously out of the bullpen. So far hasn't given up a run, only one start, but still pitching great. One hit in 6 innings, 6 Ks, he's playing great. So I think this is a really solid team. I think they're built very well. I like their bullpen, I like their starters, I like the lineup so far. It's impressed me more than I think I had expected. And I don't remember what I said in my preview. I'm actually going to check right now. Let me see. I had them at 83 wins. I think that's not really fair. I think I'll eat that now. I think that was very under. I don't remember what you had them at, but I like what I see from the Giants so far. I'm going to call it real.
I think I had them at like right at 500 or maybe like one game over. I'm not fully bought into this team quite yet. One player that I do think we should be hearing more about to start this year is Matt Chapman, who has been incredible. Off to a start where he's hitting 310, two home runs, walking 17% of the time, and he's got a 435 WOBA. Now, his ex-WOBA is 276, so that would imply that he's getting pretty lucky, but I'm not sure that anything under the hood for Chapman would necessarily indicate that this isn't at least somewhat real. Like, I don't think he's going to be twice as good as the average hitter all season, but for a player who is as good as he is defensively, I think if he's able to put up even like three quarters of what he's doing right now on the offensive side of the ball, he could be one of the best players in the league this year. I love Elliot Ramos as well, guy who's cranked three homers so far, 314 average. Don't love the walk to strikeout rate with him, only walking 2.8% of the time thus far, and he's got a 33% strikeout rate. So he's going to have to kind of bring those numbers back to earth a little bit, refine his plate approach. But like, that's kind of always been the thing with him. Like, we've always kind of felt like if he's able to sort of draw some more walks, not chase as much as he does, he could be in for a true breakout season. What I did not expect at all is this start out of Wilmer Flores, who has hit four home runs already, driven in 11 runs in just 34 plate appearances. Wilmer Flores, I would say, is probably not a guy that I think is going to be able to keep that up over the course of this year. I don't think he is breaking out at age 33 while playing in a pitcher's ballpark. So I think it's going to rest for this team with their pitching staff. Logan Webb, I mean, we know what we're getting out of Logan Webb. He's shown us that to start the year already. I mean, he is who he is. Robbie Ray, I think there are some legitimate questions with, but I do think he also has that sort of upside where it could be a really strong season out of Robbie Ray. And so far, I mean, the numbers have been a bit shaky, but he's also coming off a season where he had a lot of injuries. So I'm going to be patient with him. And Jordan Hicks, I am super excited about. I was checking out the Stuff Plus leaderboards the other day, and Jordan Hicks actually led Major League Baseball in pitching plus, sort of a combination of the stuff and location blended together.
Eno has
one
to chill.
Start. And
this is now too many
pluses. Plus,
too many pluses out of the pitching. That is, I what combination of stats is pitching plus? Like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I love it, but it's ridiculous.
Through one start, yeah, he was the leader. And if you remember, Jordan Hicks had a really strong start to last year's season as well. Through May, he was looking like he was going to have a true breakout season, have that conversion from the bullpen to the starting rotation look like it was real. But then he fell off so hard in the second half of last year. So he put on a lot of weight this off season to try to prepare his body for a full season starter workload. I am hopeful that that's going to last and that he is actually going to be able to put in that full season. You know, I don't think he's going to give us a full year of ace numbers, but I do think he might be able to show more consistency than he did last year. And I still want to see them get Hayden Birdsong into that rotation. Started Landon Raup over him. I'd like them to flip those two guys around, put Hayden Birdsong in at the five. We'll see if that actually happens. If it does and things go well for all these pitchers, I think this could be a legitimately good team. But I'm not fully bought in yet, at least with this like 8-1 start. You know, I think, you know, maybe I would put their projection up a few games, but I would still be surprised to see them get anything more than like 85 or 86. Next up would be
Landon Raup's numbers, by the way. Crazy.
Yeah.
So far, his Statcast is like crimson.
Okay.
Like, everything is bright
red. Fair
right.
enough. Well, maybe they should
8 Ks. He's got the lowest XBA on the team, lowest X slug, lowest X Wobicon.
Only one team right now is above 500 in the American League Central. That is the Detroit Tigers, and they are 5-4. So my question is this real, and do we think that there are going to be no truly dominant teams in the AL Central? Like, and I guess what I mean by that is there were a few that we could see as teams that would make a big leap from where they've been at the past couple of years, namely the Tigers and the Kansas City Royals. Do we think that all of those teams are going to be sort of mid at best and really have a ceiling of maybe like 85 wins?
So I don't think the Royals are going to end up being a concern by the end of the season. I think they're going to end up, you know, getting back to what we expected to see day in, day out from last year. And the Tigers, I think, are very good. Kerry Carpenter has 3 homers. Riley Green has 3 homers. Torkelson looks like he's starting to round into shape of what they were expecting. Dylan Dingler hit a dinger, which is fun. Yeah, I mean, this is kind of starting to enter the time period that we expected the Tigers to show up, and it seems like they kind of are. Don't forget they still have a very good rotation, too. So I'm not surprised that the Tigers came out hot this year. Also, AJ Hinch is a very good manager. We know that, so not surprised to see him take the young guys and help them reach their potential. I think this team could be very good. Colt Keith has walked 11 times, by the way, in 34 plate appearances. Something to keep an eye on there. I know you love walks. I mean, who doesn't love walks?
I do love a walk.
You do love a walk. But yeah, very good stuff there. 441 on base right there with a 170 batting average. So really, really pulling the weight in the walks there. This is a good lineup. It's very young with a lot to offer for sure that I think, you know, we'll start to take them more seriously over the course of the year. I think last year it was like a fun little story, like, hey, they made the playoffs. But this year I think they'll establish themselves as a real threat out there in the Central. I do think that the Royals probably will either give them a good run for their money or win the division outright. I don't expect that the Royals are going to be underperforming like this for the rest of the year. I still really like Jonathan India being a part of this team. Bobby Witt has started off pretty slow for Bobby Witt purposes. He's slugging under 400. He's got a 718 OPS. He's exactly at a 100 OPS plus. We know that that is not Bobby Witt. So very, very easy to expect that we will see more from him. The rest of this lineup so far has been also just kind of underperforming. Vinny is not hitting. Jonathan India is not hitting. Again, I do expect better things out of him. Salvi is not hitting. He's older, but I still think he had a good year last year. He could do it again. I know that's a lot of players to mention where it's, you know, a lot of guys who are not performing well, but I only bring it up because I think that that probably will turn around and they will start performing well. And the rotation is so good that you kind of have to believe that eventually this lineup will at least be able to give them the support they need to win a bunch of games. So I feel like that's coming. Tigers are a fun story so far. Royals expect to turn it around.
Yeah, I totally am with that as well. I predicted the Royals to win 87 games and the Tigers to win 86. I'm going to stick to that completely. I'm still very confident that those are the two best teams in this division. The start that the Twins and the Cleveland Guardians have had, I think, goes a long way towards confirming that. As the season goes, we'll find these teams sort of separate themselves a bit from that like 500 purgatory, and I think that they will both establish themselves as possible playoff teams, sort of depending on how those other wild card spots shape out. I wouldn't be surprised to see one of those two grab like the final wild card spot, but
the Twins are terrible.
Yeah, they're not looking good. Houston Astros right now are below 500. They are 3-5 to start the season. They removed Alex Bregman, Kyle Tucker from the lineup. Cam Smith, the rookie, not off to a super hot start yet, and their pitching has not looked great at all.
Cam Smith has an OPS plus of 5.
Yeah, that I think is not real. I'm still totally on Smith. I mean, we got to give these guys a bit of
the it's not as bad as Yonder Diaz, whose OPS plus is negative 20.
So. Oh no. Well, that's what I'm going to ask you, Brody. Do you think this is a down year for the Houston Astros? Are they going to turn it around? Is this real or is it fake?
Well, once again, this will come up in part two of this episode. Well, not part two, in the back half of this episode. Stay tuned.
Okay.
All I'll say for now is yes, this is real.
All right, fair enough. I might be inclined to agree with you. I mean, what I am going to say is I think Texas wins this division, and I'm starting to think they do it by a considerable margin.
Going away.
So they might have it locked up pretty early on. I know that a couple years ago it seemed like that was the case, and then the Astros really came storming back and took it from them. I think that was 2023, but they don't have the offensive firepower that they did when they made that happen. So I wouldn't be surprised if this was real.
Maybe the Angels are real. I know we're probably not going to talk about the Angels, you know,
not quite yet.
Yeah, no, but I mean, the Angels are at least fun.
they're starting out pretty fun for sure. I mean, you got to hand it to them.
Look, I love Ron Washington, so you know,
yeah,
that's I can root for him. So glad that he's having some fun with a weird roster out there in LA.
Now you're gonna know my answer to this one. I think we can do it pretty quickly. The Atlanta Braves, 1-8. Is this real? I say no.
No.
No. Okay. In agreement so, there.
Yeah, I think this is a weird combination of things. I think bad pitching so far, not going to be the norm. Spencer Schwellenbach is literally the only person who's had like decent outings so far this season. I just don't think that this team is not going to hit the way they haven't hit. Jerickson Profar goes out for PEDs, and I mentioned before we should talk about it. I don't think there's like a ton to talk about now that I think about it. It's just, it's a bummer that somebody who had a fun story is now completely tainted forever, because that was kind of it. He still is going to get his $30 million or whatever they're owed, $35 million. But Austin Riley is like at a 32 OPS plus. We know that he's not a sub 100 OPS plus hitter, let alone sub 50 OPS plus. Don't expect that to continue. Marcell Ozuna is hitting. He's literally the only one on this team other than Matt Olson, who also is having not a great start, but he's 135 OPS plus, 828 OPS, decent, but still only one homer, 7 hits and 40 plate appearances. It's just, this is not who this team is. It'll shake out. If you're a Braves fan, don't freak out just yet. I mean, freak out because you're 1-8, but don't have a complete meltdown.
That train's left the station. Braves fans are freaking out, but
yeah.
I do think that they're going to come back and be just fine.
Yeah.
Will Urubreu hitting .538 right now, but unlike Nate Silver, he's actually good at his job. 3 home runs, WRC plus right now above 300. Obviously, that is not sustainable, but is this real? Is this going to be an all-star season out of Will Urubreu?
Considering he's black inking every offensive category, like rate stat, no, I don't think this is real. This is very impressive. It's fun. Yeah, he's already almost at 1 war. He's leading the league at 0.9, which is crazy fast to accumulate a war. That's on pace for a 16 war season, which, you know, probably not going to happen. Yeah, I mean, he's got a 355 OPS plus. Again, the numbers are crazy. Very fun. You know, 3 homers so far. He's got a couple of doubles, 11 hits, 30 plate appearances. So numbers are good. 7 walks to 2 strikeouts. He's playing very well, hitting very well. But I really don't think that this is going to be what we expect out of Will Urubreu for the season, even though it is fun to see.
Right now, if you go by FanGraphs WAR, I know everybody's is a little bit different. Aaron Judge and Kyle Tucker both have already accumulated 1 WAR this season. Will Urubreu right now is at 0.9, but he's also having a great
reference
WAR. Oh yeah, that's okay. He is having a great day at the plate today, and that has not been reflected on these leaderboards yet. So I have to imagine he will have over 1 WAR as well by the end of the day. I think this is real to an extent. I don't think he is all of a sudden going to be like a top 10, top 20 hitter in the league, but I do think he's going to be consistently productive enough that it raises a lot of important questions within the Red Sox organization about, when do we call up Roman Anthony? Do we trade Sedan Rafaela, who, you know, they just signed to an extension last year, so it might be kind of difficult for them to trade him. These are all really good problems to have, but I definitely think Willier is going to have that type of season where you can't really take him out of the lineup. Yeah, I'd be surprised if it sticks at like a 160. Next up is one of those players I just mentioned who already has 1 WAR. Kyle Tucker is off to an amazing start to his Cubs career. Hit his 5th home run of the year already today. Stolen 3 bags, which is pretty interesting. If he's going to try to run more this year, that could make him particularly interesting, especially amongst like fantasy baseball circles. I mean, he's already one of the best hitters in the league. If he adds that to his game as well, looking at a potential number 1 overall asset for you fantasy managers out there. But hitting .302 to start the year, .444 on base, 20% walk rate, only striking out 11% of the time, and he's got a .395 ISO. Now, we know that this is real, that Kyle Tucker is completely capable of putting up elite numbers at the plate. He's done it for most of his career, I mean, he was putting up video game stats last year before he suffered that injury that proved to be a lot more serious than we had originally expected. That was a real bummer. What I'm going to ask is, do we think it's possible that Tucker likes being in Chicago? Do we think he's going to try to push to sign with them long term, or is this going to be a one and done? Do we think that this is a relationship that lasts?
That is a very good question, not where I was expecting to go with it. I think that he is going to be a free agent. I don't think that he'll accept an extension. Let me see. One thing that's very important here. No. Okay. His agent is not Scott Boras, in case you were wondering. Yes. However, I do still think he will be testing free agency. After seeing what Soto got last year, I mean, Kyle Tucker's numbers could be, he could honestly be in the same realm, like number-wise. The only difference, he's a righty, except he would have better defensive metrics and more steals, and he's faster in general, and just from the right side of the plate. But he still could absolutely get a monster, monster contract, so I wouldn't be shocked to see him go become a free agent. Playing in Chicago is absolutely a very friendly place in terms of the fan base, so I wouldn't be shocked if he really enjoys it there. The Cubs certainly have money to spend. They are one of the more wealthy teams in the league, so if they really are so inclined to bring him back, they absolutely can. But I don't think that we'll be seeing an extension. I also think he's hitting 319 currently, including today's numbers. He's off to a torrid start. So, I mean, yeah, this is absolutely what you want to see out of Kyle Tucker if you're a Cub fan. I would not get too excited about them just locking him up long term.
I think if they do bring him back, it's going to be in free agency. He's going to give all 30 teams a shot to make that winning bid. And I kind of would be surprised if it was actually the Cubs. So I'm going to say that Kyle Tucker's Cubs tenure is not real. I think it's going to end after this year. But I do think he's going to have a career year there. I mean, he's obviously one of the very best hitters in the entire league. And I would like to see him be able to do that over a full healthy season. And being a contract year for him just gives him all the added motivation to, you know, really perform to the very, very best of his capabilities. So
he will be turning 29 in January, so this will not be the 500 600 700 million that you expect for the, you know, Vladimir Guerrero extension that you know has been seen on Soto's number.
I think he'll be pretty close, though.
I think he could probably get four. Yeah. I wouldn't be shocked. Okay. For, you know, 10 for four wouldn't be too out of the realm of possibility.
Jacob Wilson of the A's only struck out for the first time all season today in Chase Dolander's MLB debut. Dolander's first strikeout of the season and of his career was also the first strikeout of Jacob Wilson's season in his like 35th at bat, which is pretty wild. Right now, Jacob Wilson hitting 364, 416 WOBA, 176 WRC+, and a 0% strikeout rate. Going into the day, again, he did have his first strikeout of the year today. Those are potentially traits of the next star shortstop. Do we think that this is real?
That's pretty impressive. I gotta say, when kids come up, you know, the first thing that usually takes a while to get used to is the pitching. It's not, you know, it has nothing to do with your swing. It's, you know, just figuring out how to read it and see what's coming. So the fact that he was able to just continue to keep going, yeah, impressive. He had 28 games. So, yeah, not a ton of time to get adjusted, you know, before getting a full run this season. So very impressive. Whether or not he's going to turn into Bobby Witt of the West, I am not too sure. Like, he's flashing power, got a bunch of RBIs, you know. The only thing I will say is that in those 33 at-bats, he also doesn't have any walks. So maybe he just really hates striking out, but, you know, you still have to show some discipline there somehow to have, you know, numbers that you think that can stay consistent for the season. So I reason to be excited for sure. Kind of doubtful that, you know, this is going to be like, he's not going to have like a Yogi Berra season where he strikes out 20 times. If he does, great. Love it. Would love to see it happen. I just don't think that that's going to, that's probably not going to happen.
You mentioned the thing that I was going to talk about, which was the fact that his walk rate was also 0%. And I'm going to say this is not real because his exit velocities still are not great, averaging 85 miles an hour. Max EV for his career still 104, which he did in a limited sample last year. So I just don't think he's a guy that's going to impact the ball enough to be a true star player. We could see him be in that Stephen Kwan tier, perhaps. Like, I think Kwan, Luis Arraez are the guys with the best hit tools in the league right now. Jacob Wilson could absolutely be in that group, but I don't think he's ever going to be able to reach true superstardom. So I'm going to say what Jacob Wilson's doing thus far is not real. Nathan Eovaldi threw a complete game shutout against the Reds earlier in the week. Across two starts this year, he has thrown 15 innings. He had a quality start on opening day against the Boston Red Sox, and he only has a 1.20 ERA. Do we think that this could be real? Is this a potential Cy Young season out of Nasty Nate?
Cy Young is pushing it, but I mean, look, Eovaldi's been around for a very long time. His fastball is not what it used to be. We know he was a fastball guy for a long time. This is absolutely a thing that you need to do if you want to keep pitching at an older age. He's 35, so it seems like what he's been able to do with his breaking ball is, you know, or his breaking balls, I should say, not in the way that your uncle does. His breaking balls absolutely picked up the slack that had to be picked up by losing his fastball a little bit. So good for Nate. I've always kind of had a soft spot for Eovaldi. He was very good on a Yankee team that he was like the only good pitcher on. Always kind of wanted to see him do well wherever he ended up, except when he was in Boston. So I'm happy that he's able to keep it going. I do think that's kind of the extent of what this story will end up being. I don't think that he's going to win a Cy Young at age 35. I do think that it will be, you know, a serviceable season for him, but it's fun. Good start. Absolutely. Good that he's getting to let it ride a little bit here early on. I don't think that we'll see too many six plus innings, inning outings from him, but, you know, fun. Good stuff. Good job, Nate. Way to be.
I am totally with it. I think that this could be real. I mean, I don't think he's going to have an ERA below 2 or maybe probably even below 3, but I definitely
or 4,
think...
but still.
No, I think below 4. I could see
maybe,
Nate...
Maybe 3.6.
I could see Nate getting like a 3.4, 3.5 ERA as his like absolute ceiling. But I do think that this could be a fully healthy season, and the Rangers are going to need him to lead this rotation with some veteran presence. So I'm pretty in on this. I think what we're seeing out of Nate Eovaldi could be the start of a really successful age 36 season. Spencer Schwellenbach, 14 innings, 0 earned runs. He's being hailed as the next ace across Major League Baseball. Do we think this is real, or is he going to come back down to earth?
Yeah, I mentioned this quickly while we were talking about the Braves earlier. His numbers are crazy so far. His stat cast is literally completely all red. 99th percentile fastball, 100th percentile breaking ball. That's crazy. So I, you know, if that's actually who he is, great, good for the Braves. You absolutely could use this right now. I don't think that's who he is. Just based on what we've seen last year, I don't know that he's going to be like, he had a good season last year, but he got hit pretty hard, like when he was getting hit. So if what he was able to fix in the offseason was enough that he now is going to be a guy who literally doesn't walk anybody and is striking out, you know, a third of the guys he sees while completely able to limit the exit velocity on the balls that get touched, I don't know if that's fully who he is, but so far he's looked great. I expect that he'll have a good season. I don't think he'll be winning a Cy Young this year, though.
I think he honestly could. I am fully in on this guy. I think this is very, very real. He has like 5+ pitches, some of the best command in the league. And this is a guy who he wasn't even really on the top prospects radar like this time last year. I mean, he made his debut around late May, definitely showed flashes like instantly when he got called up, but this has been a meteoric rise out of Spencer Schwellenbach, and I am all in on this guy. I think this is very, very real, and we could see him as maybe a top 5 pitcher in the league this year. Hot take, but I'm totally in on him.
His splitter is nasty, it looks like. His slider and his splitter are complete nasty. No, I mean, his fastball, I said, is 99th percentile, but I mean, yeah. Like, this is lofty.
He's got it.
Lofty stuff for a guy through a couple starts. But again, anything's possible, I guess. So it's a good start. We'll see.
Now, to sort of end on a bit of a sour note, Dylan Cruz, negative 71 WRC plus to start the year, striking out almost half the time. Obviously, that in itself is not real, but do we think that the Nationals have an actual reason for concern here with their top prospect, one of their top two prospects, because they also have James Wood? Or is this just kind of a really slow start for a guy who's going to be a star in this league?
Yeah, I think, you know what, it's very easy to freak out when top prospects don't do well out of the gate. But it's always, always, always to remember that patience is important with guys who are this young when they come up. I mean, Dylan Cruz is certainly very talented. We know that. So I would be shocked if he ends up being a guy who's ends up 21st percentile in hard hit percentage over the course of a season when he's fully arrived. So far, he's just his X stats aren't there. His number stats, counting stats aren't there. It's not working out yet. Do you need to maybe send him back down for a little bit? Again, he's 23. Like, I don't think there's a real rush to get him up here. I think it could end up being damaging to the ego to have him up here. You know, I don't know how much longer he would, you know, want to just struggle day in, day out. If you go down, you can work on stuff, have a little less pressure, all that kind of stuff, when he might really need it. So, you know, he's got one hit so far in 30 plate appearances. I think we could be getting to the point where it's time to consider moving him back down and letting him cook a little bit, because he's 23. You don't want to break him. You don't want to, you know, completely ruin his confidence, and it's just not happening. That being said, don't freak out in general. I think he will be fine eventually. Guys with this kind of talent, with this kind of pedigree, usually don't bust out. It happens, but rare. He's got the 79th percentile in barrel. Now, again, his X stats aren't there, but at least, you know, like it's in there somewhere. He just has not been able to activate it yet, and he probably is struggling with pitching at this level. So just let him go back down, maybe work on whatever he needs to work on, get him back up here. Hopefully, you know, maybe by the end of the year or something, or maybe in a couple weeks. Just maybe don't keep throwing him out there and making him struggle like this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not gonna throw out like everything that we know about this kid based on a really awful 10 game sample. I guess where I might disagree with you is that I don't think he should be sent back down. I mean, like I said on one of our previews, the gap between AAA pitching and the big leagues right now is so wide that I think you just have to let this happen and let this play out. I mean, if we get to like late May and it hasn't gotten any better, then you might have to kind of pull the emergency brake on this season. But I do think you have to, especially because this is not a season where the Nationals are going to compete for the NL East. You have to kind of let him just get his feet wet at this level and really just throw him into the fire, no matter how bad it is at its worst. And this is absolutely its worst. So Dylan Cruz is going to be fine. However, like if you drafted him in a fantasy league for just this one season, I think you have definitely reason to be worried. But I'm not going to switch his outlook for like long term just because of this. I think he's going to be fine.
So he's hit the ball harder this year. Like his max EV this year is 111, last year is 109. Not a huge difference, obviously. Maybe that does tell you that it's the swing is fine, the mechanics are fine, but his strikeout rate is literally half. So, I mean, it can do some damage to just not do well this long. Like, you know, mentally, like it could really get in your head. That's why I would say it might be best just to have him continue to just see some stuff on like Traject maybe or something, just like have results somewhere else, work on stuff. Probably never failed in his life. So, you know, I worry about breaking prospects like this. I feel like I've seen it with top guys in the Yankee system before. It's like it's in general, it's just you don't want them to just fail consistently. I feel like there's got to be a point where you just say, okay, take a step back, take a breath, you know, go fix yourself and come back and try this again in a few months or something, a few weeks.
Yeah. Last guy I've got on this real or not segment for the first 10 games of the MLB season, Walker Buehler, 8.68 ERA through two starts. I think this is pretty real. Now, obviously that's going to come down. Not going to have an 8 ERA for the whole year. As I said on the East preview last week, Walker Buehler had a really bad season coming back from Tommy John last year with the LA Dodgers. His World Series heroics definitely went a long way towards people forgetting all about that. Red Sox gave him $21 million in the offseason. I don't think he's going to have a good season. I don't think he's the pitcher that he was just 2 years ago. I'm pretty low on Walker Buehler right now. So kind of a down note, but what do you think about Walker?
Yeah, well, so far his fastball has been better than in years past. Obviously, it's, you know, a handful of starts, so it's, you know, it's not a ton to go off of. But if he can use his fastball better than he did the last 2-3 years, or well, I guess last year and 22 back when he was, you know, before he was hurt, he's been gone for so long. Maybe his arm is starting to get back to a point where he's comfortable with, you know, his fastball again. But that's going to be really the key. And even then, his numbers are not great. It's just better than it had been. I don't know. I don't know how much I believe in Walker Buehler in the long run. I think he ended up in a pretty good place. Like, Boston's probably going to be a good spot for him where there's not a ton of pressure because the rotation is pretty decent. He's not there to be like a, you know, the ace of this staff, and they have high expectations, so that'll help in general, you know, mentally. So I mean, I don't know. His stuff numbers are really not good. They're not impressive. The only thing he hasn't done is walk people. Other than that, like, it's, it seems due to regress. So I, you know, you can be happy that he's starting off well. And again, like, it's not a bad place for him to land in Boston. You can be excited, but it doesn't project like this is going to be the norm.
We will see if those players and those teams are able to keep up what they've done over the first 10 games. In the case of Cruz and Walker Buehler, we'll see if they're able to turn it around, still have a productive 2025. Those are our takes for some of the major storylines across the first three series of this year. Now it's time to get into the really fun part of this episode. Brody and I have each prepared 5 hot takes, bold predictions for what we're going to see this year. I try not to let what we've seen thus far really influence these too much. I've got them prepared.
I totally did.
Fair enough. No, that's okay. I've got them prepared in order of, I think, most to least likely. So we're just going to see what we've got so far. I haven't heard yours. You haven't heard mine. Brody, yep. Do you want to start this off?
Sure. My first one is pretty harmless. I think it's, again, mine are absolutely informed on the first week of baseball.
That's fine.
I think that's a bit more fun, to be honest with you.
Sure.
But so starting off, I do think that it's very possible that both the Cleveland Guardians and the Houston Astros, both playoff teams from last year, both end up missing the playoffs this year.
Okay. Fair enough. We've kind of already went into why, so I won't make you explain too much on that one. I'll probably go in depth onto some of them, but do you have any particular reasoning for these that you haven't already mentioned, or have you really?
The Astros bit off more than they can chew. I think they expected to just replace Bregman and Tucker with, you know, Cam Smith and maybe get some more out of some other young guys, but like maybe have Jeremy Pena step up or whatever. You know, Isaac Paredes, I think they really expected to have a big season just because of the Crawford boxes. It's not happening. Like, Altuve, they had to move back to second. Now I think he's back in left again. Like, I feel like they're kind of running around like a chicken without a head right now. Like, it's kind of messy, which is not what we expect for the Houston Astros. So, I don't know. I'm not bought in. I just don't think this is going to look good. And then Cleveland, I think, kind of did the same thing. They got rid of offense and then expected it to come from somewhere else, and it's not. You know, they have a few guys who are hitting to start up the season. Jose Ramirez is a god. As we know, he's the most underrated man in baseball year after year after year, apparently. And Stephen Kwan is obviously out to a really hot start. Other than that, you know, you lose Josh Naylor and all of a sudden you are kind of missing lefty power. Like, it's, you know, maybe you should have held on to that. So I don't know. Not a great look. The rotation hasn't been great. And by that, I mean, they've been terrible. So, I mean, it's just bad looks to start the year so far. And we still don't know if Stephen Vogt is even a good manager yet. So fingers crossed. I like him a lot, but we don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so my first bold prediction for the year, and this one is kind of, you know, influenced a little bit off of the first 10 games, but it's also a guy that I have really been in on as a true breakout candidate for a long time. I think we're going to see Lars Nootbaar get MVP votes in 2025. Now, nice. I don't think he's going to win the award, but I could see him coming in between like 7th and 10th place. This is a guy I've really, really liked for a long time. Exit velos have always been around like 89-91 in that range. His max is 113. Incredible plate approach. Over the past 3 years, his walk rate has been between 12% and 15%. He's kept his K rates below 20%. His Savant page has been bright red, but we've never really seen that true breakout season out of Nootbaar. It's looking like this could be it so far, because he played 2 games today, so we'll see exactly how this shakes out, but he He's already homered twice. He's at a 414 batting average, 514 on base. Walk rate staying consistent with where it's been over his career. He's got 14% right now. It's more than he's struck out at 11%. Isolated power has gone up from that 150-170 range to 241 to start this new year. And he's at a 234 WRC plus. So we've seen injury concerns for sure out of Newt, but if he's able to stay on the field for a full year, I think this is going to be his true breakout season. And I sort of expected this to happen after he leaves the St. Louis Cardinals, but this is it. He's here. I think he's a star. This is going to be an all-star appearance year for him. And I think he gets a few MVP votes at the end of the year.
Newt Bar, he's our star. Anyway, this feels like the season that we've expected year after year after year with him that felt like it was just around the corner. So far, it's here.
Yeah.
I like it. I don't know about MVP votes for him.
That's why it's bold. You know,
it is bold. It is certainly bold. Absolutely possible. I am a little doubtful that he keeps it up over the course of the year, but I like where you are looking. I like the optimism for him. Also, something I just learned. His teammate, Jordan Walker, has the fastest bat in the league so far, 100th percentile bat speed.
Jordan Walker just recorded a ninth inning single just 1 second ago.
He lasered that, by the way, into the gap. That was
also
a rope.
Fun fact, it actually just won my friend his fantasy matchup in our league. This is a two-week matchup, and the score was 645-645, and Walker just got an at-bat to end this game and now broke the tie. So congrats to Mr. That? E. That's pretty crazy.
Oh, Andy Páez off the wall. Oh, no, never mind. I thought that was off the wall.
Pedro Páez. Andy Páez.
Oh, not Andy Páez. I saw it's better than calling him Andy Pages.
That's true.
Anyway, I do like the Lars. So my second, I have that the Giants will end up being the biggest competitor in the NL West for the Dodgers, as I hinted earlier.
Whoa.
And I do think that a big part of it will be Luis Matos having a breakout year. I'm impressed so far. His numbers are fantastic. Small sample size, has been coming off the bench, but he's still very young. What he's shown so far and flashed so far is very impressive. His stat cast would be a lot better if he's a qualified hitter. Obviously, you know, horseshoes and hand grenades and ifs and whatever, all that good stuff. But his numbers are great so far, and his X stats also look pretty good. Not striking out, got a steal. It's looking good. Looking very good. I'm impressed with him so far, and I, again, like the Giants in general. So I think that this is finally going to be the season that the San Francisco Giants fans have been waiting for since they won 100 games a few years ago, and a big part of it will be Luis Matos arriving.
My second bold prediction, two players combined for 140 stolen bases. Now,
nice.
So we saw Acuña steal 70 2 years ago. I think... Who was it, Otani, who led last year? I know, obviously, he had...
Remember
that
he went 50-50?
Of course it was Ellie. Well, yeah,
it was Ellie.
But
yes, which he will come up later in this list for me, by the way,
and
in a big way.
Yeah, actually, Ellie is the primary reason for this prediction. I don't know exactly who the two players are going to be, but I really think he's going to be one of them. I think Ellie has the capacity to steal maybe like 85 bases in a season. He might just make too much contact and hit the ball over the wall too much to even be like in that realm of possibility.
Stay tuned for number five for me, folks.
Okay. I love Ellie. I think if he steals like 80 bases, it would require somebody else getting 55. I think that could be Fernando Tatis. It could be Victor Scott. Chandler Simpson is not up yet, so maybe I have to wait on this one for a year. But
he's not going to hit enough, though, to steal 50
bases.
That's probably
true. I really don't think. Yeah. But, I mean, Bryce Terang had 50 last year. He's off to a pretty solid start this year.
Jose
Ramirez quietly stole 41 last year. Jazz had 40. I could see Jazz stealing 50 this year.
I don't think he'll steal. I don't think the Yankees will let him run enough.
Yeah,
they probably appreciate their outs too much.
Corbin Carroll's super fast.
Corbin Carroll could steal a ton.
Yeah, he absolutely could. So I don't know exactly who these two will be. I think one of them's going to be Ellie De La Cruz, but two players combined for 140 stolen bases. What's your number three?
Very well segued. My number three is that the Yankees will have two 30-30 guys.
Nice.
One will be Anthony Volpe, and the other will be Jazz Chisholm.
Ooh, I like the Anthony Volpe.
I really think it's possible. Volpe is hitting the shit out of the ball to start the year. He's not hitting for average, which means he's not getting on base, which means he can't steal. But I do think that is coming. You know, his average is getting higher. Like, he had been hitting like 200, I think, like, you know, 3 days ago. He's up to 300 now. He's been getting on base a little bit more. The hits are coming beyond just homers. He literally, I think, at one point only had homers when it was like three. He now has 4 homers, 10 hits. And 3 doubles. So once he starts hitting singles, which will be coming, like once he puts himself in a position where he can steal second base, he only has 2 walks so far. But once he starts getting on base on first, I think we'll start stealing or seeing the steals coming. And I think that he could easily hit 30 homers this year. He hit 20 his rookie year, 21. And it seems like he found his power again this year. And we mentioned that we were going to talk about torpedo bats. I think if we're going to talk about him, it's probably here because Jazz also is using one. Jazz is easily a 30-30 candidate. The dude can pop homers with ease in Yankee Stadium especially. And the torpedo bat thing is interesting because Volpe, it's funny because he did seem like he was getting jammed a lot the last couple of years. So, you know, if this is to mitigate that and all of a sudden turn those into hits or even homers, I mean, he kind of starts becoming really scary. Like, he becomes a real weapon offensively. So here's hoping that he can actually be the weapon that they expected him to be, that we expected him to be when Volpening Day was a big deal back in the day. You know, I would love to see it. I do think he's very capable of going 30-30. And Jazz, I'm not even going to discuss why even more than I did. I think it's just obvious.
Definite candidate. So my number three is also a New York Yankee. I think Ben Rice records a WRC plus at or above 130 in more than 500 plate appearances. But this is the kicker. And he also records 10 errors at third base.
I don't think they're going to put him at third, but I do love where your head's at.
I think the third base options are so bad for the Yankees that when Giancarlo Stanton comes back and he has to fill into that DH
lineup somewhere,
they need to keep Ben Rice's bat in the lineup, and they're going to say, get ready to learn third base, buddy. It's not going to go too well, but he's going to hit so much, and he's going to draw so many walks, he's going to hit the ball so hard that they're going to say, fuck it, that's fine. Rather have you there than DJ LeMahieu or maybe even Oswaldo Cabrera. Like, I do kind of like those guys, but like, you got to keep Rice in the lineup, and I could see that happening. So Ben Rice, 130 WRC plus and 500 plate appearances and 10 errors at third base.
God, I do love it. I really do love it. Ben Rice, the third baseman, is hilarious. Yep. Ben Thrice, we love it.
Ben Thrice.
Ben Rice, Ben Nice, has been what I've been running with. I really think that people are surprised by him. But no, dude, Ben
he's
Rice,
great. Ben great Nice. Hitter.
This is really fun so far with Ben Rice. This is a fun story. I'm glad that he's a hitting because the Yankees really talked him up. If he was not hitting, they were going to look real stupid. So this has been very fun with Ben Rice. I really like it. The bat is absolutely there. I think you can do it.
Yeah.
Not a bad call.
What's number four?
All right, so number four, this is where we're starting to get bold.
Oh, yeah. Wait till you hear mine.
I think that it is. Now, I also want to clarify something. My bold prediction universe is not all consistent. Like, these are not, like, all based on one another. This is just,
Of course.
Right? You know what I mean? All right, so my number four. Kyle Tucker will beat Shohei Ohtani and all others for the National League MVP, leading the Cubs to an NL Central title and a deep playoff run for the Cubbies.
That's sick. Love it. I would love to see it. I mean, I planted my flag on the Cubs. I've been all in on Kyle Tucker for years. He's one of my favorite players in the league. This would be so cool. Any particular reason for it or just Kyle Tucker's bat?
I think that Kyle Tucker is a winner, dude.
Yeah?
I think that he is just, that's like the kind of ball player he is. The Cubs have been dying, and the fan base has been dying to have a legitimate season for like a decade since they won the World Series. And they finally get a real star in Kyle Tucker. Like, they signed Dansby Swanson, being like, you know, this is, he won the World Series. Dansby Swanson is going to be our new cornerstone piece. And he's like, he's Dansby Swanson is fine. Like, he's not a superstar. Kyle Tucker is a superstar on a walk year at age 28. I think he's going to go out and absolutely ball for a really good fan base in Chicago that is desperate to love him and try to make him stay. I think this is a perfect match for this season. I think that Kyle Tucker is going to absolutely just put out a ridiculous season. And I think that if Shohei doesn't pitch, he really could win the MVP over him. This could be a Jordan situation where it's like, sure, you could give it to him every year. Or Kyle Tucker is in the National League for 1 year. He had a great season. Let's give it to him.
Okay.
You know, he hit 330 with 45 homers. Like, come on. So, you know.
I'd love to see that out of him.
Yeah, I think it's possible.
Number four for me, Miguel Rojas DFA'd for bullying Roky Sasaki. If you heard the Jazz Chisholm interview last week, you know this is kind of a long-running story. When Jazz was a rookie in 2020 with the Miami Marlins, Miguel Rojas was a real asshole to him. He would throw his shoes in the trash, try to stifle any sort of like individuality out of Jazz. We know how much of a fun player Jazz is. Miguel Rojas was not a fan of that. Doesn't like rookies. Fun. Really just, yeah, no, he's a piece of shit. I don't like Miguel Rojas.
He doesn't like rookies or Rokies.
Last start, not yesterday's start, which went a little bit better for Sasaki. After his Dodgers debut, stateside debut, of course, it did not go well for Sasaki. He could not find the plate. Stuff looked really bad. Splitter was not being thrown over the plate, so hitters just spat on it, did not find any sort of success, and he was crying on the bench afterwards. And clearly this is a guy who, first of all, I felt bad because Roky Sasaki looks like he's about like 14, so it just looked like there was a crying child on the Dodgers bench, and that kind of made me feel bad. Also the fact that, you know, he's had sort of a hard life. His parents were killed in the tsunami. So it's like, hey, you can give this guy a break. Like, I obviously don't like the fact that he joined the super team and, you know, how his free agent process went in the offseason. But we don't have to, you know, give the guy so much shit that he's crying on the bench. And so, I don't know. Maybe I'm too soft, but Miguel Rojas won't be. And I think that Miguel Rojas does not take kindly to this. I think it leads to some clubhouse drama with the Dodgers. I almost put somebody on the Dodgers fights Miguel Rojas in Roky Sasaki's defense, but I didn't know exactly who that would be, and I think it might just be a little bit too cartoonish. So I'm going to go with just the straightforward DFA. We've seen enough of Miguel Rojas. I don't think he's going to hit very well this year, and they're going to be able to call up Alex Freeland pretty soon, and they're just not going to need Miguel Rojas. So I think he's going to be up to some serious antics. He's not going to take too kindly to a young kid showing off his emotion, not even showing off, just showing emotion at all. It's going to lead to the end of his tenure with the LA Dodgers.
I will remind you that I did find an article. I texted it to you. I don't think we might have spoken about it quickly on the podcast. I don't remember, but I did find an article in a Japanese baseball magazine, like last summer, that said that whatever team acquires Roky Sasaki will collapse because he would not be able to handle the workload and the way that American pitchers are treated, considering he was like used to special treatment because he was so talented and special there. Yeah, I don't think that's going to be true in the long term, but he's certainly struggling here first, so could be something to it. Yeah, it's I do like where your head's at with Miguel Rojas being cut for being a dickhead.
Yeah.
Jazz story was interesting. So, my number five. Now, I hinted at this. I think that Ellie De La Cruz will be the second player in MLB history to join the 50-50 club this season.
Oh, yeah.
You want to talk bold? I'm going for it. So, Ellie so far is on a tear. He's got two homers and he's got two steals. He's not doing full Ellie as much as we would like to see, but it's in there. And if he goes on like a crazy tear, I mean, again, it just kind of depends on how much he actually gets on first base. I think that he could absolutely have a 50-homer season. I think that that is like not even a question. He's got the power for it. Being a switch hitter is going to be a little interesting, depending on what side, you know, he ends up being stronger on. You know, the matchups later in the game could be interesting. I think that he could absolutely steal 50 bases again, and I do think he's got a 50-homer season in him. So there you go. 50-50 season for Ellie coming.
I absolutely love that. I think he will 100% join that club at some point in his career. It could definitely be this year as well. Amazing player, special talent. I really like where your head's at with that one. My fifth prediction, and the most bold one on my list, I think this is the year that a professional baseball player, doesn't have to be one in MLB, it could be a guy in at some level of the minors, but I think this is the year that a professional baseball player comes out as gay.
Interesting. is very bold.
We've never seen this at any level of professional baseball. We saw it in the NFL and in the NBA with Michael Sam and Jason Collins. Neither of those players were very good. And I don't have a specific player that I think this is going to be, but I'm kind of hoping that whoever it is actually like a legitimately good player. Like, you know, you have to just like admire his work on the field, because I think this is the year, because
maybe it's Miguel Rojas and that's why they cut him.
Ooh, maybe. Maybe it's Roky Sasaki. Who knows?
Oh, could be.
Sort of my thought process with this one was I was thinking about Pride Nights and how in the past the Texas Rangers have been the only team to not have one, and
the Rays bullpen would like a word.
Yeah, the Rays bullpen wouldn't like that either. Sort of afraid that given Trump being back in office and the cultural shift to the right across America, like companies doing away with diversity and all that shit, that maybe a few more teams would not host Pride Nights this year. And I didn't want that to be my prediction, because that's just kind of sad and sucks. So what I decided to go with would be that they would be bringing them back next year, because the tides would turn back in the other direction, and a way for that to happen would be a player coming out as gay. We haven't seen it ever, but part of the reason that there was a football player who came out as gay and a basketball player who did the same is they did it at a time when it was like 2013 to 2016. So it was like the end of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Gay marriage got legalized like right around sort of the end of the Michael Sam, Jason Collins era. And I don't know. I think now that woke is being seen as dead, or that the tides have sort of shifted on woke, I think we need a story to bring progressive culture back into the folds across sports. And there would be no better way to do that than to see a pro baseball player come out as gay. There's no way that there isn't a single one, right? Like,
that's exactly what I was about to say.
Statistically, there's no fucking way.
There has absolutely been in the past, and they just never said anything.
Yep.
They exist. They've been in there. I'm sure players know who. Sure, there are names that, you know, they know or whatever.
Not going to speculate on who it will be, but
no, of course
I do
not.
Think it's going to happen.
There are guys, I'm sure. It's a matter of the dickheads in the league being complete dickheads and like being so intimidating that it prevents it from happening, or, you know, plenty of other reasons. Who knows? I assume that eventually that will happen. I do like that it could be this year. Who knows?
I would
and
like
it's
to
definitely
see it.
A very bold prediction.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Do you want to run through your five, refresh the people, give them a full list?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so number one, Astros and Guardians both missed the playoffs this season after making it last year. Number two, Giants as the biggest competitor in the NL West for the Dodgers, Luis Matos' breakout year. Number three, Yankees with a duo of 30-30 guys, Anthony Volpe and Jazz Chisholm. Number four, Kyle Tucker beating Shohei Ohtani and all others for the NL MVP, leading the Cubs to an NL Central title in a deep playoff run. Number five, Ellie De La Cruz becoming the second member of the 50-50 club.
Love it. Mine, Lars Nootbaar receives MVP votes. Two players combined for 140 steals. Ben Rice has a 130 WRC plus or higher in 500 plate appearances and makes 10 errors at third base. Miguel Rojas DFA'd for bullying Roky Sasaki, and a pro baseball player comes out as gay. So
nice.
Those are our 2025 bold predictions. This has been the Mudville Podcast. If you are not aware already about the Mudville Patreon, you can access it at patreon.com/Mudville. Sign up. You can receive updates anytime we put out a new episode. A lot of fun stuff going on over there. Be part of the fun. Check it out. Any support you can show to us would be super, super great. We would really appreciate it. We would love you forever. I think that's going to do it for us this week. Brody, is there anything else that you want to get off your chest before we leave the people for the week?
I think that's probably it, but this has been a fun one. I like doing hot takes.
Me too. Maybe we'll do some more as the season progresses and see how some of these age. It'll certainly be fun. So I have been one of your hosts, Nolan Rabine.
I've been your other host, Brody Stapp.
And we will see you all next week.